Yeah, I wanted to be very clear on that, that this all started back in 2006 when I was watching the World Cup in Germany. And I told my boss, in 4 years, you need to be prepared for me to take a month off. And he was really into soccer, so that was good. He said, okay, fine, you can do it. That's exciting. And then 2009 rolled around, and I told him, you know, I'm taking that month off. And he started to get a little antsy. He said, are you really going to do that? Oh, yeah, yeah. But it did start as just a vacation, a pleasure trip. It was, as Russ would identify, I still remember his sermon, it was very self-centered initially. I'm glad that changed over time. But I did get to meet a lot of Christians there, at least in spread out spaces. And I've got this subtitle up here calling it a foot washing experience, because every place I went and met a new group of Christians, it literally felt like they were washing my feet. I mean, we talk about hospitality here in the South, and we're very typically hospitable. It's the exact same thing in South Africa, but it's hospitality and friendliness and just openness everywhere you go. Even Christians and non-Christians, but especially in the Christian homes when they identify with you and you immediately become family. They really put themselves out for me, and I was just humbled by that experience. I want to read a passage where I drew this reference from in John 13. Beginning in verse 12, Jesus, when he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." And they definitely did those things and challenged me to carry that out as well. So I have to show some of these right up front. Everyone in South Africa asked me, what did you expect when you came here? Did you expect to see lions in our front yards and in our backyards? And when you walk down the street, zebras running along the highway? And I said, no, I didn't really expect that. And they said, well, some people do. This is in Kruger. Okay. It's a national park. You do not drive down the road and see elephants walking on the road. Nor do you see water buffalo stopping traffic in the cities. This is Kruger also. Nor do you drive down the road and see zebra grazing on the side of the road in the thicket there. All of these were taken in Kruger. Some more of South Africa, however, is like the waterfront in Cape Town. That's Table Mountain in the background with the cloud on top of it. You can see the big screen TV where they're showing a soccer match. And everyone down there watching. I think it was Chile and Honduras, maybe. I can't remember. Cape Town at night. And you may have seen this. Robin says he likes to show this when he comes to the States. Show people, look, you know, we have electricity in South Africa. So he took me up to Table Mountain and said, you need to take a picture of the city at night. So I took a picture of Cape Town at night. The black there in the background, that's the ocean. That's the Atlantic. There's a major bus terminal in Johannesburg taken from the Carlton Center, the 50th floor. They have an observation deck where you can see the whole city. There's another picture taken. Johannesburg is a city of about 6 million people. And Pretoria, which is really just right next to it, it's almost like Dallas-Fort Worth kind of analogy. Pretoria is another 2 million. So those two cities right there together are 8 million people. It's a very big populated area. And as I told some of the folks there in South Africa, of all the trips I've taken, this is the one I would most quickly confuse for being at home, just being in South Africa. It was very comfortable. I don't expect you to read all of this on this map, but I wanted to give you an idea. The size of South Africa is a little less than 2 times the size of Texas. So it's a fairly big country. I think it's like 25th largest in the world. And some of the places I visited, this is where Robin and Lynn live, in Cape Town. So I call this my first home there. I did fly into Johannesburg, but I was only in Johannesburg for a couple of nights. And then I went to Cape Town for a week. And Lynn had newly prepared a bedroom with, you know, African motif. And she said, you know, tell me what you think of the room and is it nice? And I said, yeah, I really like the room. She said, well, you're the first person to stay in my African motif bedroom. So that was really nice. And they had just remodeled that room and put a bathroom in. But like I said, everything, it felt like everything they did was for my comfort and for my good. And the church there meets in their house. This is on the first floor in their living room. This is the fireplace behind them. And directly above us, they put in a second floor in their own house with, you know, they put in the metal I-beams and they put in the flooring. And it was basically a vaulted ceiling living room. And they just cut it in half by putting a floor there, set the chairs up top, and that's where the church meets. I had no idea. I mean, it's a major undertaking. You'll see it. This is Craig. His mother always chided him for not smiling in the pictures. So just for Lynn, I had to put this in to let you know Craig does smile in pictures. My second home, I'll say again, is Durban rather than Johannesburg. Was because when I left Cape Town and went back to Johannesburg, I was only there for a couple of days again. And then Jason arrived. We met in Johannesburg and then flew down to Durban. And Calvin and Rashika, again, it's Adam put me in touch with them because they're Adam Kendallball, because they're friends of his from Durban. And they just, again, did everything. What do you want to do? What do you want to see? What do you want to do while you're here? And unfortunately, the ticket that I had purchased months and months and months ago, the match was on a Tuesday night, which is the night that they have their midweek Bible study. And so I missed their midweek Bible study. And I said, well, do you have singings or do you have Bible classes in other homes? And they said, well, we think we can work something out. So Thursday night, nearly the entire congregation drove 30 to 40 minutes to their home so that we could have a Bible study and a singing with them there. You know, again, it's just one of those things where it's a foot washing experience, because they wanted to make me feel welcome, and they wanted to meet me and get to know me, and Jason. I've told several people it's humbling. It's very humbling to see what they do, to go out of their way to meet you. And of course, they brought all their curry dishes. They said, "What do you like to eat? What do you want to eat while you're in Durban?" I said, "Everyone told me to have curry." So they brought five or six curry dishes, and then, you know, before we had our study, we had dinner. It was amazing. And then the place that I spent the most time was with Alan and Sylvia in Johannesburg. I spent about four and a half weeks I was there in their home in Johannesburg. And it's the same story again. You end up repeating yourself when you talk about the experiences you had with the Christians there. But even while we were there, Alan was meeting other people who were traveling and flying into Johannesburg, and he would go pick them up at the airports and take them where they needed to go. He dropped us off to go to a match late Sunday night, and he picked us up somewhere between 11 and midnight, even though he had a study Monday morning. He didn't want us to take a taxi. He didn't want us to find our own way. He wanted to pick us up and take us where we needed to go. Just utter service in everything that they did. And then Sylvia, of course, always asking me, what do you want to try next? She learned that I like to experiment with food and just have everything, you know, that you can possibly have. Well, what do you want to try next? I can do this or I can do that. She would go out of her way to make special meals that maybe she didn't like or maybe Alan didn't like, but just because they were something new for me. And of course, they didn't tell me, but I would find out later, you know, as I got to know them, oh, don't make that again, that they had done that just for me. So those are my three families that I met. Now, there were some other congregations. In Cape Town, this is Mama Louise and her five daughters. And that's exactly what Robin calls her, Mama Louise. They're kind of just a congregation in and of themselves. They're all Christians. They've all been baptized. And they work 7 days a week from about 5 in the morning until 7 at night. So he will go on Sunday night, 7:30 or 8 o'clock, and have a worship service there with them on Sunday nights. Take the Lord's Supper, sing songs, give a short lesson, 15 minutes or 20 minutes or so, and take up a collection. And just for me personally, that was an interesting thing to see and think about, was a family passing around an envelope and putting money in the envelope, and then closing the envelope, and then, you know, Robin saying, okay, now you know that this is no longer your money. This is the church's money, and you must do with it as the church can do with it. You can support evangelism. You can support those needy saints. But those decisions must be made in concert with God's word. And to think about how hard they work, and yet they would give up what they can to the church and to be used for the church's good, even in their own family, and separate that out and use it for God's work. That was really impressive. That was very neat to see. I would like to say that I had remembered all of their names, but I didn't, so I put them on here. There's Cassie. And I kept, every time I heard Yahweh's name, I kept thinking Yahweh. But no, it's not Yahweh. It's Yahweh. There's Mama Louise. That's Sophia, Aminata, and Veronique. So then back to Johannesburg. I have some red... I hope you can see the red dots.
Yes, good.
Okay. I have some red dots on there that mark a few places.
Right here, this is where Alan and Sylvia live, in Lindmeyer. Here is where the church building is in Brixton.
That's the congregation that Alan preaches at.
Out here is Soweto, and I have I'll introduce you to a preacher from Soweto in just a moment, toward the end of the presentation.
And then out to the right is Brakpan. That was a congregation that I preached at one Sunday night. There were three Sunday nights in Brixton, but their Sunday night services are actually at Alan's house, because Sunday morning they have maybe 60 people, and then Sunday night it's 10. Or 12. And people are concerned about their safety. They don't want to be in central Johannesburg at night. And so they meet at Alan's house. And so I gave lessons three times at Alan's house, once at Brakpan. And then I taught class again one Sunday morning here in Brixton. And just to give you an idea of how long it takes, from Alan's house to Brakpan, it's about a 40-minute drive. And so that gives you a feel for how big Johannesburg is, just to get around in. That's 40 minutes. So here is the church building in Brixton. I took a picture of the sign to remind myself of where it was, 88 Barnes Road. This is before class began on Sunday morning. These seating areas will be about half filled up. About when 60 people go in there, it'll be about halfway filled up. There's usually really good participation in class too. I was impressed with that. A lot of hard questions are asked, good questions. I did not take any pictures at Brakpan, unfortunately, but they did give me a business card with their website on it, so I've got that bookmarked. And I do go there because you can sign up and they'll send out a daily verse or give some news. Brakpan had pretty good attendance on Sunday nights. They did go ahead and open up the building where they were because they're not in central Johannesburg. It's much safer to do so. They're outside the city, and so people traveling to and from there and parking your car at night, you're not so worried about the car being broken into that far outside the city as you would be inside the city. And that's really the main concern at Brixton. People don't want to drive to the building and leave their cars there that might get broken into or stolen while they're in service. This was another town that I could not show on the map because it's far outside. It's in Springs. It's further out east than Brakpan. So if you remember that map, keep going along that same route and you come to Springs. And there's not sure if you'd call it a township or a small town, but it's Quatema. And there on Monday mornings, Alan and Trevor's the preacher that I'm going to introduce you to in just a moment, they go there on Monday mornings and have a very long Bible study. Sometimes 2 hours long, because they're going to make use of the time they have out there. And there are also hard questions asked there The younger man on the left, he actually was taught by Alan when he was in prison in Pretoria. Alan was going to the prison there for Bible studies until there was an uprising and, you know, some of the guards were killed, and, you know, that kind of put a halt to people coming and going freely at the prison. But this man, of the six or seven who were baptized, this man, when he was released from prison, he wanted to continue those Bible studies. He sought out Alan after he was released and found him and said, I want to keep studying. I need to grow. I need to learn more. And so Alan has continued those Bible studies with him. And what was impressive about this is during the World Cup, all the schools shut down. And so not only were there the adults who were studying on Monday morning who were able to, but they brought all their kids. And so they sat for 2 hours on a holiday Monday morning studying the Bible. And that was really impressive. And answering questions. They were participating in these classes. And these were hard topics. They were asking questions, well, you know, the head covering, does it have to cover all the hair? Should it come down to the shoulders? Does it have to be a covering? Can it be? They were asking very hard questions, and they were, you know, asking the children, what do you think about this? What verses would you use? It was a very good class. And this is Trevor. Trevor preached, and I say preached in the past tense because just recently he's had to stop preaching. He preached in Orlando, which is a township in Soweto. Soweto stands for Southwest Townships. And it's to the southwest of Johannesburg. And under apartheid, it was where all of those who were basically non-white were forced to live. Without, you know, electricity most of the time or running water or whatever, they were forced to live there. Trevor is Sotho, and he is from Soweto and preaches there. And some of the challenges that he met when he was preaching was talking to, say, a Zulu, someone who is a Zulu non-Christian. They would hear in his voice that he's a Sotho and say, what can you tell me about being better? You're a Sotho. I'm a Zulu. These are some of the challenges that even the local preachers have. And yet he would take maybe a Zulu Christian with him, and the bridge would be gapped. I mean, the gap would be bridged. It would be closed. Oh, this is a Zulu. Okay, I'll listen to him. Right? You really have to set yourself aside and just let the gospel do its work, however it can. Of course, you didn't have those problems among Christians, but when you're out trying to talk to people, he did have those problems. And I say until recently, Trevor preached in Orlando without enough support as long as he possibly could. He lost his house. He lost his car. And his wife said, you know, you need to open your eyes here. Look what's happening. You know, maybe we can come back to this later. And he was really broken up over this, tearful, about having to leave his preaching position because he could not support himself and his wife. So he's recently had to move from Orlando to Pretoria. And when you can't pay off a house or you can't pay off a car in South Africa, you're blacklisted. And so when you go to get, you know, funds, they say, oh, well, you're too high of a risk. So he can't buy a house in Pretoria. He has to rent. He wants to serve there as a preacher because he knows the value of a Sotho preacher and how he can reach people, and he's unable to. So that's some of the challenges that not only Trevor faces, but I think all the preachers there face. Alan told me there are 10 congregations, and maybe he was just pulling the number out, 10 congregations in Johannesburg and 3 full-time preachers. So they do as much as they can, but they're very limited on their time. They're very limited on what their funds are allowing them to do. So, as I said, it's a very humbling thing to go and this day even, you know, I talked about a foot washing experience. This day, Trevor is in the middle of making a decision that he has to tell this company whether or not he's going to quit his job and move to Pretoria or not. And he's adamant about taking me on a tour. He said, you need to see Soweto. And he's going through all of these things in his life, And he takes out the time to spend almost a day, over half a day, taking me around Soweto so I can see what life is like in the townships. And it's a very different life than what's in Johannesburg, Sandton. But he wanted me to see that. And again, it's because he was serving me the best way he knew how. And I was very humbled by that. So there are some challenges for the Christians there. I have a couple of minutes. I'll just tell you one of the challenges that I saw everywhere were the young people do not have this. Robin's sons are it. You know, they're in their 20s, but that's it in Cape Town. So they wrestle with, you know, do I make friends in other congregations who aren't necessarily following the word like we are, just to have friends who are at least morally similar to me? You know, who do I spend my time with? These are the things that they were... I spent an entire day with Craig, their younger son. And he asked me throughout the day, what is it like to be able to spend time just with Christian companions? Only Christian companions. And I didn't know what to say. You know, I looked at him and I said, well, that's basically all I do. And I felt terrible about that. Because, you know, he's trying to find companions who are like Christians. And he doesn't know what it's like to be with a group of Christians and just be completely comfortable with that. And it's the same everywhere I went. Even in Johannesburg, where there were 60 people present on a Sunday morning, very few young people, and even fewer single young people, maybe two or three in Johannesburg. So it's hard for them. And the reason I bring that up is what I'm asking for and what they ask for is our prayers. Just prayers. Their influence will impact the community so that they will have people believe, not, yes, for the salvation of their souls, but also for the preservation of the souls of those people who those young people who are Christians and don't have companions. So I think we've got about 5 minutes. I'll just ask very quickly, does anyone have a question, a burning question, do you want to know about South Africa before I step down? Oh, Stephen? Well, as I was telling David, one of the things that struck me is how the preachers there who receive support from the States are more respectful, or they think about more the money that they receive more so than I think about it when I put it into the basket as it's passed by. And for me, I mean, I say that to my shame. That's something I need to change. They are very aware that this is money that's used for God's purposes. And they will sacrifice in their own lives to further the gospel. And so the question I had to ask myself when I came back here is, how much am I really sacrificing? I can tell you, I do not sacrifice enough. And that was one of the things that I brought back when I came back here, is that I do need to sacrifice more. And it's not just monetarily. It's in many different ways. Okay, we're out of time. Thanks.